Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It is a happy, happy Sunday afternoon at 4:30. We're recording and going to talk about the defense from yesterday's game against the Packers, of course, but we're also going to enjoy the fact that the Ravens are still alive another week. Joining me to share in that joy is Coach Evans. Coach, how you doing today?
I'm doing amazing, man. Ecstatic. Hope watch as is the term that we coined to watching that Browns and Steelers game. And we got a chance. That's all you can ask for in sports and in competition, just to have a chance. And you got to make the most of your opportunities.
Now, you've coached at a high level of Florida football. When your teams just got into the postseason, how much of a big deal was that at that level in terms of being a lot of what you needed to accomplish in a season?
I have a story that kind of fits this perfectly. My first year at the school I'm at now, even though I'm not coaching, we scheduled a bunch of hard teams. And so going to the playoffs, we didn't even know if we were going to make it. We were barely 500 or right at 500. But because we played so many good teams, we had enough power ranking points to barely squeak in. And when we squeaked in, we had our last game, a bye week, then the playoffs. And in that bye week, some people quit on us because they thought we weren't going to make it. But the team came together as a unit, and we went to the third round of the playoffs with barely getting in there. Had a nice run and lost in that last week by like 3 points. Should have won that game.
All right, so you're when you say had some people quit on you, was it the fans were quitting on you, or was it any players?
Some players quit.
Oh wow, that's tough.
Players quit.
I know that happens at the high school level. You know, you just people drop out of school and things happen. Mm-hmm. But you know,
they quit thinking we weren't going to make the playoffs, and so they ain't want to come to practice that last week because we had a bye week after our season was over between mm-hmm. the play well. So they ain't want to come to practice, and they just like, we ain't going to playoffs. We quit. And guys just came together and stuff started clicking, and we probably would have made a longer run. One of our best players was suspended for going to the other sideline. He got suspended for 5 games. The game that we got eliminated on was his 5th game. If we'd have been able to get him back, he was so electric. We might have had a chance.
All right, well, that is a good story. It is appropriate to this. And I look back at the 2012 Ravens, and you know, if you look at the 3 most recent Lamar Jackson Ravens teams that really had a chance to win the Super Bowl, 2019, 2023, and 24, those teams were all great. They mm-hmm. were top of the league in terms of quality of roster, you know, what they had going into the playoffs. They had a chance each year. They didn't. None of them got it done. They fell short for various reasons, and we don't need to go into all that. But there's a lot of luck involved in the playoffs. And you look mm-hmm. at the 2012 team. You don't believe if you believe they belong there, then why the hell were they a 9-point underdog at Denver, a 7.5-point underdog at New England, and a 4-point underdog in the Super Bowl? And they overcame all that mm-hmm. to win it all. They had no business doing it. So this Ravens team probably will face a similar road. The 2000 Ravens were 6-point underdogs twice. Now that mm-hmm. was probably just wrong in that case, but they were 6-point underdogs twice at Tennessee and at Oakland before they were a favorite in the Super Bowl, like 2.5, I think. Get in and you got a chance.
Get in, survive in advance. That's all it is. That's all it is. If you get in, you got a chance.
All right. Now the less pleasant topic, the castor oil we need to take with this. I think that was a treatment that mothers used to give a long time ago. The Ravens defense we have to talk a little bit about. Mm-hmm. Their inability to stop Malik Willis, of all people in this game, certainly somebody they've had some success with, I believe, in the past. But a very tough game against him.
Malik made himself some money last night. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, don't wish injury on anybody, but you can tell that second half he couldn't move like he wanted to, even though he was still a little mobile. But he made himself some money. And the fact that we couldn't stop something that we see every day in practice really, really bothered me. The fact that he was able to hit receivers, he still gave free releases. And it's just the total defense really bothered me, with the exception of about a few people. And we'll talk about them later.
You think Malik is going to get a starting job somewhere next year? Do you think he has to settle for being a backup? And I guess I'm leading into the question is, should this be someone the Ravens are considering as a backup quarterback?
Ooh, I didn't think about that, but that's a good question. Depends on what Snoop's going to do, because Snoop may have made himself some money as well, because Snoop with two good showings last night and then the Bears showing. But I think Snoop's going to stay. As long as we keep Lamar, I think Snoop will stay, because he's tested the waters in other places, Miami, Cleveland, and didn't work out. And I think in his mind, hey, my best chance of having success is here. Maybe I can go start and do something somewhere else, but it ain't going to last long.
I'm with you. I just think Snoop's, what, 36 years old now, and Malik is 26. So he'll be 27 next year. So I'm just wondering, if you're signing a quarterback, a backup quarterback for a 2 or 3 year deal, let's say, and that's usually the term of these kind of things. If Malik to sign a 4 year deal as a backup, he'd have to be accepting that he's going to be a backup the rest of his career, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But if he
Snoop's 27, Ken. Snoop's 27.
Oh, I'm sorry. How'd I get that wrong? Who am I thinking of? Josh Johnson?
Josh Johnson's 39.
Oh, no, I know who I'm thinking of. Tyrod Taylor.
That's Yeah. Tyrod's okay. Up there. Snoop's younger than Lamar. I still remember Snoop's visit, his first visit to Utah. He had never seen snow. And him and somebody else just went and dove in the snow and started playing in it. That's how long I've been on Snoop.
Was Snoop, where did Snoop come from then? He's somewhere in the South, right?
He's from Miami.
Miami, okay.
Mm-hmm. He's from Miami.
South Florida guy, all right. Okay, so a couple things. They generated two turnovers, which, thank goodness, because if the center hadn't have snapped the ball early, might have been a different outcome. Really good play, a great awareness by Green to get on the football, and great off-man pick by Humphrey, I thought. And honestly, they converted both of their turnover opportunities, and they weren't 100% opportunities by any stretch. That fumble is probably 50%. That interception's not 100%. I don't know what it is, but good off-man play by Humphrey on the ball. But they got a little lucky to convert both of their turnover opportunities.
Yeah, they did a good job of getting the turnovers and then putting points on the board, because that's the key thing. It's one thing to get the turnovers. It's another thing to make the other team pay for turning the ball over, and we finally did that, because we'll get a turnover and don't take advantage of it by whatever kind of way that we've done this year. But to take advantage and put points on the board, to kind of put a little bit more pressure on them, was key, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was definitely good. They had very good sustained drives we haven't mm-hmm. seen in just weeks, even with Lamar. So it's been. You know, it's nice for them to, you know, for starters, win the snap count battle 74-44.
Finally.
Yeah. Finally. I mean, it's only the fifth time in 16 games they've had 60 plus snaps, which is incredible to me. That's just, you know, 62 or 63 is about the league average right now. Mm-hmm. And this is not the Baltimore Ravens. If it's 5 out of 16 times they get 60 snaps.
Well, the plan was a plan that we haven't seen this year. Well, I know that's on the other side of the ball, but mm-hmm. it was a plan that we hadn't seen implemented this year.
You're talking about going more to the power run game as opposed to zone?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The Ravens had some better offensive line play that came out of that. I think we want to keep it on the defensive side for right now, but maybe we'll mm-hmm. have a chance to fit that in later with some other things we talk about. They went with just four defensive linemen again, something I just cannot stand. When they do it, I think it's the biggest risk when they do it. Mm-hmm. But then they only played 43, what I'll call real snaps. They had 44 snaps in the game. They had some penalties in addition to that. But then they also had a kneel that is not a competitive snap. So it's really only mm-hmm. 43 snaps they had to worry about. Urban played 6. Okoye played 3. Mm-hmm. And then Travis Jones played 38. And Jenkins played 19. So They almost could have gotten by with two defensive linemen.
And I remember watching the game last night, and I was like, well, let's see what pass rush we're going to get. There was not a defensive lineman on the field. It was Draymond Jones and Tavius Robinson inside. Mm-hmm. And on the outside, it was Mike Green and maybe Van Noy. That's what started, opened my eyes to start trying to look and see what defensive tackles were in. Because they quickly, in pass rush situations, put Jones and Tavius inside.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it if it was for sure pass rush situation.
Okay, so that's the package I call race car.
Okay.
Four outside linebackers. The Ravens in 2019, and you may remember this or not, Coach, I don't know, they used that on 13.2% of snaps the whole season.
Mm.
That's game script right there, by the way. They only played the base defense 10.2% of the time that year. So look at the difference in that in terms of you know, when you have game script with you, you can do whatever you want. That Rams game, they won 45-6. They had the race car in all the fourth quarter, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I was happy to see it. It's the first two snaps they played all season with four outside linebackers. So very excited.
Yeah, now I'm excited to see if they can build on that coming this week. But we'll get into that a little later on.
Sure. Okay. David Ajabo was active as the fifth outside linebacker. He played the first snap of the second half. That was his only defensive snap. Last week he was active. They made him a special teams coach. Special teams captain. Mm-hmm. And he didn't play any snaps on defense. And I kind of thought, I was reading the tea leaves thinking they're going to activate Josh Tupou for this game, I'm going to guess. And they had to bring him up to the 53 since he already had three elevations. Mm-hmm. I thought they were actually going to cut Ajabo, and the signals were all there, but they didn't do it.
I hate to keep pounding this about Ajabo, because every time I talk about him, I think about somebody else, and that person is not a factor to us.
Pickens.
Yes.
I remember draft night. Well, you're very right about that. I'll say that.
And it's to the point where it's time to almost cut your losses with Ajabo. Mm-hmm. It's time to cut your losses and you know, you got a decent Isaac waiting in the wings, wherever he's at. He's a mystery man, kind of like what was the receiver we had signed a while ago?
Perriman.
Not the real fast white kid that we barely saw him play. Isabella.
Campanero.
It was Isabella.
Campanero.
We rarely saw. No, not
you mean Isabella. Okay.
And Isabella. And we rarely saw him after we signed him that year. We was wondering if he was a real person. So I'm starting to think Ajabo needs to be in that same boat. To the fact where, hey, you had your shot. You know, people been hurt. We've been drafting guys. And you just proved that you're not better than the guys we have. So move on.
Well, they've shown their hand with this. At camp this summer, Harbaugh was kind of scolding the media about not believing that Ajabo really had a place on the team and writing some things. And there were people who were writing, you know, using the bust word regular on him. I don't take that attitude towards players, though. I just say I don't see a player at the place for him on the roster or you know, have that discussion. Don't tell me what the story is. I mean, frankly, just don't tell me what the story is. And then you show your own hand and you have him a healthy scratch for all these games, or you play him one snap, or you have him only playing special teams. It's just
he could be in a situation where it's like Oway. He just needs to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Oway is flourishing somewhere else. Send Ajabo to Detroit. He had his most success on the opposite side of Aiden Hutchinson. Send him to Detroit for something.
That'd be interesting. I'd wish him nothing but the best, and I hope that you know, if he's in the NFC, that's probably better. But you know, if somebody else in the AFC wants to take a chance on him, good luck.
Yeah, I was just trying to think about the place that he's had success and would probably help build his confidence. And he's had his most success next to Aiden Hutchinson before he tore his knee or ankle, whatever happened to him in the draft process.
Yeah, Achilles, right? I think so. Tough game for the entire secondary in this one. That's something I really want to take some time talking about. Mm-hmm. A lot of issues with the big plays allowed. And I hate to say it, I don't think it was any one thing. I mean, they were beating like a drum in every which way.
Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Zone, man. I got a breakdown, and I don't know how true it is, of the coverages here. And, you know, I'll go through it real quick. Zero, and this is from PFL. Okay. Zero, and, you know, people take that. Three times, one, three times, one double is zero, cover two, four, cover three, 17. And the most they played was cover three, quarter six, cover six, eight times. And then a little red zone coverage was four times. So for the most part, we played cover three. And when we did it, he found the spots. especially, and then when we went to man, he found the matchups that were more favorable for him to complete the pass. And he gave his receivers opportunities because sometimes they were covered, but they made plays for him. And it make your quarterback look good when receivers can go make plays for him, and then you just build that chemistry, which is something that comes with reps, you think. But Malik was cold. Mm-hmm. Fresh off the sideline, he just trusted them boys to go make plays for him, and they did.
I'm going to start with the very first play of the game to Romeo Doubs down the left sideline. It was really actually very good coverage in terms of positioning by Wiggins. Didn't find the football, but it just missed his arm. I mean, it's just kind of an unfortunate situation. A little bit Brandon Stevens-esque in terms of how Wiggins was beaten on that particular play. And Doubs just happened to make also a very good catch on the ball. But they got beaten every which way. Gilman got picked on a mesh play in the middle of the field for a really bad rub out. They got on the right sideline, Wiggins got beat on the sluggo route and got beat deep. Let's see. Humphrey got beat. He was soft on about a 23-yard play, I want to say. It was one of the three he gave up. And then Hamilton, of course, for some reason decided to hand his man off to air in the middle of the field on that first four. It was a strange play. And Hamilton does not usually make a mistake like that.
And I was going to ask you about that play. I definitely was going to ask you about that one. So I saw him and Roe discussing afterwards. Mm-hmm. I immediately thought Roquan was right because it was an empty set. It was Tampa 2. Roe opened to wall off the number 3 to the strong side. Well, when that happens, Kyle, you now have to sink a little deeper and carry number 2.
Right.
He didn't. Like you said, he passed him off the air, and Christian Watson was right down the middle of the field splitting the defense. And that's one person you don't want doing that because he's big and fast and can go get bad throws and stuff like that. And so, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not sure that he could have stayed with Watson, but he needed to drag it and smallen up that window.
At least make him try to put some air on it so the safety can kind of help him out. But by him not touching him, not redirecting him or nothing, that's just a scene. And he caught it in stride and scored. You think about it. The first quarter, we had our defensive stats. And at the end of the first quarter, we had one tackle. Mm-hmm. It was a tackle on Nate. And then the second play was a touchdown. Yeah. They didn't touch the ball no more the first quarter.
22-2 in snaps, I was going to say. So, yeah, that was something. What it reminded me of, that four verts play, is that's exactly the play the Ravens ran to get Jacoby Jones free on the Mile High Miracle. Mm. And it's Raheem Morris knew to go to the outside, and he was going towards the right receiver. He just didn't get deep enough, as we were reminded multiple times by Dan Dierdorf on the broadcast. But that was actually, wasn't there an underneath play too? There was some kind of underneath route too. So it starts off vertical, had a cut off to underneath because Raheem kind of bit on underneath, and then he went back late to that side. I'm trying to remember exactly. The underneath might've still been a 25-yard throw.
The thing that stands out to me is the actual throw. I can't even remember what happened to the rest of the stuff because I was so excited. First, I was wondering who he's throwing it to. And then when we caught it and ran, I didn't even care about the rest of it. I don't even remember the rest of the play because I think in my eyes, we were dead to the water.
Yeah.
And then that happened.
Yeah. That was definitely really cool. Just a great moment. Oh, what a great moment. Let's get back to the secondary a little bit, talk about the various guys. So Wiggins had probably his worst game as a Raven, I would say. He got beat all over the field for various plays. The sluggo we talked about, he got beat up the left sideline, and he got beat. What was his third? The third one he got beat. I had it in the article. I just need to go back to this and look at it for just a second.
I know the sluggo was the main one because it was important. And I felt like he doesn't play as fast as he is to me. Mm-hmm. He does make some plays from time to time, but for overall, he doesn't play 4-3. It's like, is he thinking too much or what? But he doesn't play fast.
I hear you on that. We see it, you know, sometimes you see he trusts his makeup speed and he's willing to break on the football because he thinks he's fast enough. And then I feel like almost his short area burst is better than his long speed sometimes in terms of catching up. But you're right. I mean, he hasn't been ideal in terms of trusting his speed enough, and getting beat on that sluggo is a good example of really not probably trusting your speed enough.
Right.
Anyway.
He had 6 balls that were considered contested catches at him, and 5 of them were caught. That's not good.
That's in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my. That's really bad.
Oh, yeah. And keep in mind, the numbers I'm throwing to you are from PFF, whether you know how people feel.
They're good. They're good on a lot of these things. By the way, definitional things. I see you've been posting some PFF stats lately on Twitter, but PFF for definitional things is outstanding, and I'd highly recommend them. I think in terms of most grading things, I agree with them, but there's some weighting things that I don't agree with them, and a lot of those fall in the offensive line. Mm-hmm. But they really have a significant underweight on penalties. And I know people have already heard this before of me a million times. And then with regard to centers, they have and guards too. They tremendously overweight run blocking relative to pass blocking.
Okay.
So that's something to look for. If you look at Linderbaum's two scores, look at his run blocking, look at his pass blocking, and then look at his combined score. It's much closer to his run blocking score. And that shouldn't be.
Right. I mean, it should be an average, I think, but okay.
I would say it should probably weigh more heavily on the pass blocking. My reasoning would be this, Coach, is that there's a lot more at stake on pass plays in terms of either win probability or EPA on those pass plays than on run plays. And I know I'm not saying that the run game's not important. It's not important to have a run game to get started with. So you don't need to go down that road.
Yeah, but the thing I like about them is they, whatever the system is, everybody's on that system. So you can kind of take it for what it's worth when comparing it to other people.
Yes.
Now, whether you agree with
other
how
people
they
across
do it,
the league.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
So at least they're all on the same playing field as far as what they're looking at. Now, their human error does come into play because humans are doing this. I actually did it for a summer. And that part of it is there. But I like PFF because they compare everybody on the same playing field, whether you agree with it or not. And that way I can get some quantitative numbers out of it.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff, and they've been regular guests of this show, so I've really appreciated their. They're also very good of if you just have questions, just ask their people; they'll always tell you.
Gordon has a question
Gordon's
for me.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's outstanding. Okay, let's keep going here. Travis Jones. Well, no, I'm sorry, we had a little more safeties and corners to talk about.
Okay,
the first one is Humphrey. And obviously, had a tough game this one. He made a bad choice of coverage to come down. I forget. I think it was the tight end Wiley. He covered and Starks did also. It looked like he should have dropped back and covered down the right sideline read on a 30-yard play. So,
I'm sorry. No, I'm just gonna say that he has mental lapses to me. Mm-hmm. He plays hard, but just like that play you're speaking of, and the play where the tight end blocked Tavius, so now he's the E-man on line of scrimmage.
Yes,
and he just runs down in there and lets Willis pull the ball and come out. He had lapses in concentrations from time to time. Now, I will say he played hard, and he's made plays this year. But for us to do anything next Sunday and going forward, he got to be locked in.
Right.
Because he is the one back there. I know Kyle's more close to the line of scrimmage now. Marlon is the one. So he has to set the tone, and he just can't be lackadaisical or just lacking focus on that back end. Because he may not want to be, but you're the leader back there.
I mean – This begs the question of he has $7.3 million that the Ravens have to pay him for him to come back. Doesn't matter what his cap hit is. Mm-hmm. It's $7.3 million for them to bring him back next year. Do you bring him back at that price to replace Gilman at strong safety? Because I could see him terrorizing opposing quarterbacks, which he really does well. You don't have to have the same speed on the back end. He can use his physicality to a certain degree. I think he'd be a great loose bracket guy if you want to, look for an Ed Reed like center fielder to play behind the receiver and pick up some garbage. Mm-hmm. I think he's shown the ability to get those off man interceptions. If they said they were making this move next week, I'd be thrilled by it.
Mm-hmm. I'm cool. If you're gonna move him to the safety 4-7, I'm down for it.
You down? Okay,
I'm down for it because Gilman, and I don't know if we're gonna talk about him later, but his tackling it. Makes me pull my hair out.
Yeah. he's done a good job, Ben. Me too. Gilman's had a very tough year in terms of his tackling. And worse than that, I think his speed is making him get into some bad situations. So we saw him when he crossed the field. One thing you'll notice is guys who have speed and trust their recovery a little bit could get into a mesh concept in the middle of the field where they have to make a choice of left lane, right lane to get out of the way of the oncoming garbage, oncoming traffic. They know how to avoid that, and they don't mind giving up a half a step to do it. But if you got a limited speed, you might run right through that mesh point, hoping the other guy in the game of chicken we'll get out of your way. And that just doesn't always happen. So Starks and Reed, when they were crossing the field and he had to cover Watson, he just got run over. And it made it look like who had the coverage on that right sideline? It might have been Humphrey. It looked like he was beaten on the play, it was either Humphrey or Wiggins. It was one of those two. Looked like they were the one that got beaten on the play, but in truth, it was Gilman who got train wrecked at the mesh point.
I've never heard it called a game of chicken when you defending mesh, but that's exactly what it is.
Yep.
Who's gonna blink first? That's exactly what it is. You got four guys that the offensive guys are taught to get to a certain spot. Defensive guys are in man. They can get, they can chase or whatever, but that's exactly what it is. It's a game of chicken. Who's gonna blink first? And a lot of times the defenders are the ones that do it because the offensive they got a low. I used to make kids play tag. So as they're crossing the mesh, you got a certain hand to tag with the other defender. That way you know who to go over top, who go underneath, and you never just straight run into each other.
Oh, you're the two defenders. The two defenders have to tag each other.
The receivers.
The receivers.
No, I coach offense. The receivers.
Okay, so left hand, right hand.
Yes.
If you're coming from the right, you have to touch with your left hand or touch with your right hand.
Left.
Okay. All right. So the left hand guy's always going underneath.
Yep. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yep. That is a fascinating bit of inside football there. Really appreciate that.
And that way there's no confusion as for who's going over top, who's going below, and then it alleviates the chance of them running into each other. But the chance of the defenders is still there to run into each other, which is what happened to Gilman. Oh, that's me.
All right. We're still good, I hope, here.
Okay.
I've got a battery exhausted warning on you for what it's worth there. So hopefully we're still good. And if not, we'll figure
out how
to reconnect. I can hear you.
Okay. Okay, cool.
So I guess let's move on now because the Ravens have some secondary issues, but we'll probably talk about them in some of the individual discussions in the second half of the show. Travis Jones, terrific at getting pressure. Some of it was wasted in this game. Mm-hmm. They scrambled out of some of the pressure he provided and got runs of 5 and 12 yards. They got completions off some of his initial pressure. It doesn't change how dominant he was in this game. And he was the Ravens, I think, most dominant, either team's most dominant defensive player in this one.
I've been on the Travis train for a long time, and he's really, since signing the deal, he's really showing that he is a guy that was worth the deal. I think we got a steal of the deal, and he can turn into one of the premier defensive tackles in NFL. If he can, bump his sacks up a little bit and get to maybe 6 or 7, because the way he stops the run and the way he handles people when he's not double teamed, it is amazing to me. He's establishing that little Reggie White hump move. He's playing lower with flat back, was working with leverage. When he has to chase down the line of scrimmage, he comes straight down the line of scrimmage. He does a lot of stuff, textbook, with great fundamentals that you need our defensive tackle. And if you can get somebody beside him to go with him, which I wish Beeks was still here, I think you'd have an awesome interior defensive line. And I say that not to shade John Jenkins, because I'm happy with what John Jenkins has given us at 35 years old. I'm happy. I was excited for him to be a backup at 35 years old, but I ain't mad at what he's given us at 35 years old.
I guess the question comes up here, given who Travis Jones is, and he's unbelievably good at this point, do you try and make him into the dominant three tech and get another nose tackle to play opposite him?
I agree. Let him be the dominant three. Find you a big body nose, hopefully a proven person or somebody in the draft, and then go forward. I definitely agree with it. Let Travis be the guy that leads us up front.
Mm-hmm. Got a lot cheaper options if you go for the nose, both in the draft and in terms of free agency, whatever it might be. And John Jenkins could be back for another year. I mean, at this point, sign me up for that after the year he's had. He's been terrific.
I agree. And definitely 1 year, because he'll be 36 then. definitely 1 year, because you don't know when that cliff's going to actually take place. And he's going to need time. He's going to need time to recuperate, time to recover, time to see if this is what he want to do, because 36, playing in the trenches, that's a lot. But I am tired of seeing Brent Urban down there.
He's played a lot of snaps these last 3 years now. So, hopefully – we'll see him again. I don't think Brent Urban's had a terrible year or anything, but he is, he's a very specific role and he's the third guy. You got a great zoom on that camera. I can see but anyway, let's keep moving on. We'll talk about the, I guess we'll finish later on in the show about the AFC North race and how they go into this game against Pittsburgh. Because right now it looks like Pittsburgh is missing a lot of pieces going into that game.
What's Kyle broke his arm. Washington broke his arm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Didn't hear that for sure. Okay.
Yeah, I saw it right before we got on. He broke his arm and then DK suspended. And
TJ Watt has collapsed long.
TJ Watt, yep. I still fear the other two 50 guys, but we'll talk about that a little later on. But yeah, the signs are pointing toward us having an opportunity, having a legit opportunity whenever that game takes place.
Well, so it should be, I would expect it to be a primetime game again.
Me too.
They played on Saturday or Sunday night, because it's going to be that Tampa Carolina game will be the one that competes with it for a primetime spot and affects no other time. Now, they could make it the 4:25 game on Sunday. That'd be another possibility to make it a good national game that way. But I think those are the three time slots.
Does the Tampa game not hold as much weight since they lost?
No, it's Carolina also lost. So it's one for the money there.
Okay. I didn't know Carolina lost. Okay.
So some other general things about Jay Higgins. Got his first defensive snaps on the final series. I thought he looked pretty good, made a couple tackles. There was a coverage play right in front of him that he was a little bit slow to get down on, but still a good first showing for him. Been really excited by him. And it's nice to see some of the parents on Twitter react to their own kids. You saw his dad's stuff?
I did. I did see what his dad said, and his dad goes hard, man. That's all I'm going to say. he hadn't said anything to me, but his dad goes hard for his son. And I ain't mad at it, because if it was my son, I'd be going hard too.
I really would. That's okay. I don't mind that. I don't mind even Kamalai Correa's mom, who was on my back for a while about some things I wrote about her son. The only thing I don't want is like a national media figure, the son of that on my team. Right. And Shedeur Sanders, he really does have to be better than other players in order to make it worth it to deal with the Deion factor that is a lot of overhead in that relationship.
I agree. But me personally, I would embrace it, because you can't find a way around it. You got to find a way to embrace it and make it not be weird for you to have some kind of semblance on your team. Because if it just continues to be weird, it's going to be a distraction, and you try to eliminate distraction the best way as possible. So you got to find out early way to embrace it, shut it down, or minimize it, make it the norm. So now you can get on with your day-to-day business, and him Deion not coming to the game is a big deal. That's you don't want that.
So let me, I was just going to wonder what you meant by embracing it. So let's say the Ravens had Shedeur Sanders, and it actually was supposedly a chance that they might've drafted him, even though, basically, another element of overhead.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
apparently the Ravens got a call saying, don't draft me. So if your choices with Deion are, you bring him in to coach the secondary, that's number one. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's totally embracing it, because then he's going to be in your ear the whole time, you know, and every time you pass him in the building, he's going to be advocating for his son. You bring him in on a special basis in camp to discuss what the rules are, and then you talk about the possibility of, you know, you don't want him talking to national media, you don't want him doing this. It probably does not stick because Deion is going to be Deion.
Mm-hmm.
And or possibly number three is, you don't have any rule and you let him yap it out in the national media. And it's not just Deion, it's this whole army of Deion-led advocates there. It's Josina Anderson and the way she talks about Shadur. And it's about all the stuff that goes along with that. Or you know, number four, do you say it's too much overhead altogether? We can't have Shadur. So where are you in terms of you said you want to embrace it. How close mm-hmm. do you want to embrace it?
Honestly, I wouldn't do much of any of that. I would be like, I would bring him in, and you know, if he wants to come around, fine. Him coaching for me is not an option. So he can come and, you know, maybe come when he ain't doing his thing with Colorado to a practice or whatever. And you know, we can sit down and chop it up because he's a NFL great. To me, my favorite football player of all times. But I don't push him away so they can be talking over there, like talking in code and allow people to insinuate, come in, you know, see your son, do whatever, we have a meeting or whatever. But you coming in is not going to dictate playing time. It's not going to dictate how many reps he get. I'm just, you know, you're a dad coming to see your son. You just happen to be a good NFL player. You don't work here.
Okay.
So I ain't gonna fight him to be around, but he's not going to dictate. I'm not going to cover or quiver because Deion around.
Okay.
And I love Deion. But if I'm coaching the team and his son on the team, I ain't going to quiver.
Where does he sit if he comes to practice? Does he sit over with Ozzy and Eric DaCosta? He's one of the few players who's allowed to sit next to them. Does he have to go over to the stands like any normal fan? Do they really want to send a message? Or do you bring him onto the field, let him talk to the other coaches, and maybe give a pointer or two to a defensive back always there?
Yeah, either off to the side, not in the stands, because mm-hmm. you'll get mugged over there. Mm-hmm. Not in the stands. But definitely off to the side, maybe around the DBs, maybe because he worked for the team. He played for the team. So I'm mm-hmm. sure there's some guys there that still are cool with him, like Ozzy. He can maybe stand over there and talk to Ozzy while practice is going on, but definitely not in the stands, definitely not the centerpiece in the field. And only even, you know, if you're the DB coach, if you're comfortable with him talking to him, let it happen. If not, you don't have to quiver to Deion. You don't. Mm-hmm. And I say this I'm one of the Josina Anderson, like I'm in that boat, but I'm saying you don't have to quiver to Deion with his son on the team, but okay. You can't be scared of it either. And all I think they were scared of it.
That's a rational middle ground. And I appreciate that. All right. Let's talk about the defense a little more. They held the Green Bay running backs to just 7 carries for 19 yards, 2.7 yards per carry. They were not as successful with Willis. And one of the things that came up in this game, I thought, was the Ravens did a terrible job of any kind of a organized or containment pass rush, despite the fact they didn't have any stunts in the game. They had 2 stunts. Mm-hmm. The whole game they ran 2 stunts. Right. And yet they could not contain Willis. Would this have been a game where they should have been a spy on a much higher percentage of plays? Now, you notice when they did have Simpson spy on him the one time, he mm-hmm. took him down for one of the biggest plays of the game.
I think where he got most of his yards were on zone reads, and we didn't have a contained guy. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Simpson would have been necessarily a spy in that, because he would have had to play his off-ball linebacker gap responsibilities. Right. So whoever the end man on line of scrimmage was, like, they put the tight end over there and it became Marlon. So what they were doing, in my opinion, was changing the end man on line of scrimmage, and whoever the next person was supposed to be wasn't keeping contained, and that's why he was able to pull it, I know, 2. Maybe even 3 times and get big yards. I think both of his touchdowns were on zone reads where he pulled the ball. And so whoever replaced and became a new E-man on line scrimmage, they weren't doing their responsibilities, and he pulled it out and was able to go score easily. So, but in the case of passing the ball, Trent definitely should have been, they should have done to Malik what the Lions did to us. And I think they did a one play where Trent stopped him for like maybe a 1-yard gain, where Trent fake rushed and then just kind of stood in front of the center. and let him make a move first. And so, you know, passing wise, they should have done that more. But as on the deep routes, I don't think it would have mattered because he was catching the ball and just throwing it up, and yeah, it was going to get it.
Yeah, a lot of ball out quick, as we'll get to a little bit later for sure. But I'm in agreement on that. There's only a certain number of plays where a spy would have helped, but you know, he had a 5-yard run, a 12-yard run where he got kind of twisted around on that play. That's the kind of play where a spy would have helped and probably could have gotten him down. Although Marlon couldn't, so we wonder about that. We talked about them losing the edge already, so I think we're good. Really, all the receivers, and it's a good group. It's not a great group. Mm-hmm. I guess I did not realize Bo Melton was playing two ways now. Is that right? Bo Melton played wide receiver, and he had a 34-yard catch in this game, and he played like a fair number of snaps. But he's also, I thought he was a corner coming out of college.
No, he was a receiver coming out of college.
He's listed as a cornerback on the.
I think they moved him. I think Green Bay moved him.
That's interesting.
Yeah, he was a receiver coming out, because I did a video on their young wide receiver group last year, and he was in it.
Interesting. I'll have to look back at his career last year and see if he had a.
I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago. All of their receivers were first or second year players. I can't remember if it was last year or 2 years ago, but Bo Melton was in that video I did.
Okay. I mean, you're 100% right. He's listed as a wide receiver here. No, he's listed as a corner. Wide receiver, corner in his three years. Let me look and see if on PFF he's got any corner snaps this year. But I swear I thought he was coming out of school. He was a corner.
It's another Melton now.
Maybe that's it.
Another Melton that I think is his brother.
Oh,
that,
okay.
That made it a different position.
All right. My mistake. It's an NFC team. It's always possible. Anyway, point was, all four of those receivers kind of took the Ravens to the woodshed at different points. I don't always expect that from a quarterback who's kind of new with a group, that he's going to be able to hit all his guys, you know, equally. I mean, I thought, you know, okay, Romeo Doubs or maybe Watson, they're going to get most of the targets.
And Max Melton is his brother. Max Melton is his brother. He's a corner for the Cardinals.
There you go.
And they do have both listed as, like you said, wide receiver, cornerback.
Okay. All right. Very interesting. I saw in the game book listed as corner. Anyway. So anyway, spread the ball around was the point. We're kind of doing okay on time, but I want to kind of move it forward if we can. Packages a little bit. This is a weird game because the Ravens never once, even though the Packers played a sixth offensive lineman on two snaps, the Ravens never once put a third defensive lineman on the field. Never once did it. They were never in the base defense. They were never in a jumbo nickel. They were never in a jumbo package because it was fourth and one or whatever. In fact, the fourth and one that they stopped, they did it from the nickel.
Mm-hmm.
So
is for your base, is base in your eyes, is it nickel?
Well, no, they don't play standard nickel anymore. This team doesn't. They play only big nickel, but standard nickel is the second package you see in the notes here. But the base is a standard three down linemen, two outside linebackers, two inside linebackers, and four in the secondary. So it's
three,
not
four
a,
steel.
Yeah, it's not a commonly used package anymore. But yes, but three regular 3-4.
Okay.
And then the big nickel they use 20 times, and they've gotten very comfortable, obviously, with Hamilton's size and the additional run fitting he gives them to play that. But they give up 10.6 yards per play on those snaps, those 20 snaps. That's about half the snaps. You're giving up almost 11 yards a play. That's not good. the rush nickel they use 7 times, and they only gave up 15 yards. And people say, well, why didn't we see more rush nickel? Well, the problem was that 6 of those were on the final drive with Clayton Tune at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
So doesn't really count. So,
and they were in full throttle ball mode then at that time.
Yeah, and they didn't have Malik Willis. So.
Right.
They played three different versions of the standard dime, and I kind of lump all these together. And you mentioned the one, the outlier here, but we'll talk about the three standard ones. They play three different alignments with defensive linemen, outside linebackers, and inside linebackers in the dime package, and they'll use 1-3-1, 1-2-2, or 1-1 and no. Let me make sure I'm looking at it properly here. Go to the right place, and then I will not mess this up. So the three they used were a 2-2-1-6, a 1-3-1-6, and a 1226. Okay, so three different combinations of defensive linemen, inside linebackers and outside linebackers to go with six defensive backs. And then that was 14 snaps, 8.9 yards per play. So it wasn't like they succeeded some way more with the dime package. And they went to it fairly late. They were fairly slow to move from big nickel to dime as the game moved on, I thought. You know, they were getting shredded by the passing game. And they, for whatever reason, they said, we still want to be able to stop the run. But they were late to go. They were late to move to a lighter unit that would have would basically get a lot of the times get Simpson off the field for another defensive back.
Yeah, their plan of attack really confused me, because as good as Josh Jacobs is, and I don't know if you saw it like this, but in that first half they really didn't even try to run.
No,
at all. It was.
The Ravens never got heavy. They never got heavy.
So I was one, like, I was confused as to, like, Packers, what are you actually, is your offensive line that bad? Or you got that much respect for our defensive line? The fact that Josh Jacobs had, like, three carries at halftime was baffling me, but I was happy about it.
Yeah. Four carries for 3 yards for the game. Their yardage came from, Wilson and the other guy who was in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Ravens averaged just 1.4 defensive linemen per play. Hmm. If I go back a number of years, and I've got it back to the beginning of Ravens history, but if you go back into 2000, 1999, the Ravens are right up there around three defensive linemen per play. And they got away with it. You know, they were able to keep that on the field. Mm-hmm. Now, some of that is how we look at those players. So when they had McCrary and when they're playing a 4-3, mm-hmm. you're much more likely to have three defensive linemen on the field. So that it's not really directly comparable. But even in the past, when they've been playing a 3-4, they've had much more than 1.4. I'd say a normal is maybe about 1.9, 1.95 mm-hmm. per play. And you get away from that when you play the dime defense. Well, here they played two race cars with zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up playing a bunch of dime snaps, most of which had only one.
Right.
And just an interesting different set of ways to do things here. So,
I think if you have Matabike, that number's up
because
the pass rush pressure he brings.
Yep.
I think that number is probably closer to two, because now you have Matabike with whoever that second person is, or you have Matabike as the one defensive lineman, and you bring your other three outside guys in. And you just think about that package with Matabike, Jones, Robinson, and Mike Green, or whoever else you want to throw out there.
You're talking Draymond when you say that, Jones.
Yes, and Draymond. I'm
always the North Star of the Ravens pass rush, and it hasn't been very good this year, but the North Star is what Travis Jones could do for you. And the last 2 years, he's the guy who commands the double teams
mm-hmm.
and creates these one-on-one matchups. They paired him almost every snap the entire year last year with Matabike. It'd be great to have those two back, but if they can't, they need to figure out whether they're going to go after a great nose tackle who's probably another big guy. They're going to go cheap maybe at the position. That's another possibility. Or they're going to go out and get a three tech in the draft mm-hmm. that they're excited about. Or nose in the draft. That's also a possibility. And go with Jones as the three tech. But they've proven, I think, at this point to me that they're not going to play a snap that's an obvious passing down without Travis Jones on the field.
He gets that interior push. He may not get the sack, but he at least pushes the pocket to where the quarterback can't step up. And just, you know, dot you. And that's crucial. If you can get edge pressure, quarterback can step up and get out different kind of ways, but you get that push up the middle, that's hard to get away from.
It's the kind of pressure they hate most, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right,
especially
let's talk
if you got a smaller quarterback, because they can't see them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Russell Wilson or something like that going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Aaron Rodgers is the guy who doesn't want to admit he's short, so maybe this is the week they get in his face a little bit. He looked very nervous today, didn't he, in that game?
Ken, I think they were trying to win the game, but I think their overall thing was Myles Garrett is not getting a sack on us.
Uh-huh.
This record-setting sack, because he would just turn around and just throwing the ball sometimes. He was refusing to let Myles Garrett get close to him, which I think hurt them. Because I think they could have gave up the sack and probably, you know, got some plays down the field, because they were beating Cleveland guys when they got him in zone. But because he was so terrified of Miles and giving up that sack and not having that Brent Favre moment, he was just – sometimes he was just taking the ball and throwing it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly,
especially that fourth quarter.
Yeah. How about that fourth quarter, huh? The way they drove down the field. First of all, we jumped around like idiots here as soon as the Browns got the ball back with 2:02 to go, needing to run three plays, three timeouts, kick the field goal, give them back the ball with whatever. I think it was actually under 2 minutes left because they went for it on fourth down, right? It was. Mm-hmm. And then it was going to be like a minute and 40 when they got the ball back at the worst case scenario. And then, of course, the worst case scenario comes up. Where were you on passing on second down on that? Like Romo was really hyping that. He said, you know, it's great that you ran for 5 yards on first down, but second down you should have thrown. And where were you on running some sort of play action play on that?
No, I would have ran the ball like they did, but I wouldn't have ran that play because they had just ran that play on the first down when they got the penalty. They actually ran it and they stopped it after the play and they came back and ran it on second down. I would have been in the pistol or something under center and ran outside zone and gave my back an option and give them a chance. Cause you know, Queen, sometimes we get overzealous and overrun some stuff and you can cut back on him. And I would have gave my back an opportunity to have, you know, to see it. But they ran some kind of power thing that they had ran on the first down and Pittsburgh ate it up. And I think that's what hurt that drive.
Yeah. Okay. I can see your point, particularly on the outside zone play, that would have made a lot of sense to give them an option and give Queen a chance to make a mistake is a great, rule against the Steelers anyway. Let me throw one out more out there though. If it's second and seven, I do this because I think your chance of getting the running first down on two plays is lower, but if it's second and five, maybe your run chance is enough that I stick with your plan A, but plan B I would have is just accept the fact that you might have to take the sack. And I just don't know if I can trust Shadur enough not to throw the ball into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't call it a pass play at all.
Yeah.
you've kept him for the most part, other than the ball, the interception, the dumb interception to Judy. Yep. I don't think the first one was his fault, but the dumb one to Judy, he wasn't throwing the ball. Mm-hmm. We was going to, this is 4-minute offense. I'm going to run the ball. You know I'm finna run it. I know I'm finna run it. Can you stop it?
Okay.
And I'm gonna take my chance. I'm gonna kick my field goal like they did and see if you can, you know, go down the field with less than, because if I get the first down, game over.
Yeah, that's that. And again, that is something to really play for. There is a big upside to making a pass for the play too. I mean, it's all a matter of which is the better way to get it. Whether you're more likely to get it be the runner pass.
Now, I think I'm with you.
Opposite, I'll stick with play.
If it's opposite and it's Aaron Rodgers, I'm cool with throwing it. But I feel like he'll protect the ball enough to where, you know, the worst thing that happened would probably be incomplete.
Okay.
But with Shadur and his, you know, being a rookie and, you know, kind of, you know, his history, I'm running the ball three times. He got to prove to me that he can handle that situation and before I put it in his hands. And he may can. But this time, second to the last game of the year, I'm beating a team that, you know, I probably shouldn't beat. No, I'm going to play the numbers. And my defense has been playing good defense all game long because their defense does something that a lot of people can't do, play a lot of man, which hurts Aaron Rodgers. And every time it seemed like every time they win the zone, Aaron was picking him apart, which is what he did to us the first time.
Maybe is this something you think the Ravens are even capable of changing when they play him again?
To my not as much zone?
Yeah, to play a lot of man. Maybe you could just play matchup. You know, you can play matchup and you can play half side, you're playing zone, and the other half you're really in a man coverage against the X or against one particular receiver. However you want to gimmickize this,
right?
Are the Ravens capable of doing that? You know, the box and one defense in college basketball is probably the best example that I think people understand about trying to shadow an individual great player.
Right. But, and the thing is their three best players offensively to me, excluding Rodgers, are not playing. Mm-hmm. That's DK. That's the other little receiver. I can't remember his name. And that is Washington.
Not Calvin Austin, is it?
Calvin Austin, that's his name.
Is Calvin Austin not playing next week?
I don't think so.
Okay, wow.
It's early, but he's like hurt.
Okay.
So he may make his debut, his return next week. But as of right now, he's not playing, as of right now.
What would be your feeling on the likelihood Lamar plays after not being at practice for any of the three games?
Depends if it's Saturday or Sunday.
Okay, that is a big deal.
If it's Sunday, I think he'll play. If it's Saturday, I know it ain't but a 24-hour window, but it's going to be tough because that back, you know, me being an older guy and just moving wrong and the back tightening up, this dude could barely even talk.
Yeah. All right. At 62, I don't even know what you're talking about. So. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the pass rush in the game here. Ample time and space. They gave 6 times to Malik, which is really remarkable, frankly, given how he threw the ball around on the Ravens this game. He only had 22% of the time. Did he have ample time? On those plays, gained 102 yards, 17.0 per play. That's 51 yards above expectation. The expectation is 8.5 yards per play on those ample time and space throws. I'll just go through these real quick, Coach, and I want to get your response on this. And ball out quick 12 times, and that was a lot of what he did. He was getting the ball out before 2 seconds, before pressure arrived. I think PFF and I have some differences on pressures. I have fewer this week, largely because they're giving some late ones to the Ravens. But 44% of the time, 114 yards, 9.5 yards per play on those. You should get about 6, so he's 42 yards above expectation there. Did have a turnover on the interception by Humphrey on one of those. And then 9 pressures, 33%. That's not going to get it done, even though 9-6 is a good pressure to ATS relationship. They got 68 net yards on those. Should get 3.5 yards per play. Instead, they got 7.6 yards per play. Did have 2 sacks, but that's 36 yards above expectation. And this is a combination here for Willis and Toon. The two of those together outperformed their opportunity set by 129 yards in that game. That's 3.9 yards per play above expectation, which you're not going to win many football games like that. Mm-mm. playing defense.
At all. We just happened to get saved by a heroic performance offensively. But going forward, the scheme or player execution has to be a lot better, because what you put on paper, what you put on tape yesterday, is not going to cut it. If you really want to do something, you know, Sunday or Saturday and in the playoffs, Saturday night's not going to work. You let a backup quarterback come in there and during that be like Brady-ish almost. Mm-hmm. But added feet in there, added legs in there.
Lamar Jackson. I mean, that's who he looked like in this game.
Exactly.
Should scare the hell out of you. All right. Orr only went to a 5-man rush on 6 total plays. They used very conservative 4.2 rushers per play, which I was fine. I mean, that's a little bit of use of a spy is probably in there, but basically they just tried to drop 7 into zone and they spread the field, and Malik Willis was able to get the ball to grass where there was no defender near.
Yep. That throw to Christian Watson, that first drive was beautiful. it was beautiful. I hated to see it, you know, being a Ravens fan, but that's how it should look when they make a mistake. And every little mistake we made, they were capitalizing early in the game.
Yeah, that was really unfortunate. But I think that throw being made the way it was, I think it beats Hamilton anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was going to be able to stay with Watson on the play. So they did a really good job of game planning that particular advantage of Watson mm-hmm. versus Hamilton on that play. One guy who we haven't talked about too much, Roquan, has looked great in those kind of coverage drags this year. He's been fantastic doing that. He's very underrated as a coverage player, in my opinion. Where are you on that, by the way?
Bro, to me, and it's probably is I'm probably in the minority of this, as good as he's been coverage wise, he don't make enough impactful plays to me. Like, I'll look at a box score and see Roe with 14 tackles, and I think to myself, when? 14 where? I don't see Roe making enough splash plays to warrant the cap percentage.
Okay.
And except for the first Cleveland game, he was lights out. And I don't even expect him to be that good all the time, but I do expect to see flashes of that in him. And there have been games where I felt like he's disappeared.
Yeah.
And he'll have 10 tackles.
That particular Roquan game in week 2 against Cleveland is the one you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That was probably among the two or three greatest games ever played by a Ravens inside linebacker.
I believe it.
And so, but we can't expect to be that. I mean, that's not completely unreasonable. To mm-hmm. Ray Lewis, we couldn't expect to play that well every week. So anyway, all right, we'll hit on that another day. Probably get to talk about him and the individual players. There's really nothing special about what the Ravens did in terms of numbers because nothing worked. They give up 9.9 yards per play with four rushing four and 12.8 yards per play rushing five, and they didn't rush three or six. They used a little bit of deception, four off-ball blitzes. That's like nothing, 0.15 per play. Those four plays, you should really get pressures on a high percentage of those. They got one pressure, two ball out quicks, one ample time and space, and then you're really compromising your coverage when you take that extra man out of coverage, mm-hmm. and they gave up 7.3 yards per play, which was frankly is better than overall what they did. So maybe they did better to take that risk, but still not good. Anything you would have liked to see more in terms of the blitz? They got Humphrey blitzing twice. Nobody else blitzed more than once.
Now, I remember saying this during the game that I felt like every time we decided to blitz, they knew it. And they would have the perfect counter to, you know, whatever. So say if we brought somebody from the offensive left, they throw a quick pass to the right. Or they throw like right behind the blitzer where he couldn't. It's like they knew where the blitz was coming from. And I don't know if we telegraphed stuff or, you know, certain looks, certain personnel gave away the packages, but our blitzes were not the disguise that they pride themselves on. They weren't disguised, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And so, you know, maybe they just knew something. Maybe they got lucky because sometimes they could just get lucky and call certain plays, but. As far as us blitzing, it didn't work. And then we still allow free releases where they were just, you know, getting open spots and getting the ball to them. And because we don't tackle well, those free releases where it was a 3 or 4 yard pass turned into 8, 9, 10. And, you know, if they break that even further. So I just don't like the fact that we give so many free releases. And what I mean by that is, for example, they have three receivers to the right. We'll have two guys on top of three, mm-hmm. and maybe the safety way back. So in my opinion, all they got to do is catch the ball, throw like a little bubble, block them two guys that's right there, and go. Or run a little stick route with the guy that's uncovered and make the catch for the safety can come down. So you can still play zone and not give up free releases, but we give up a ton of free releases, which is what bothers me a lot.
They definitely don't have to do that because the strong side of the football field is the domain of Kyle Hamilton. He does mm-hmm. not have to give that up to anybody and get off anybody's block.
Yep.
I guess that maybe the part of the thinking is that even if you've got a wide receiver screen over there where you're going to try and bubble something out there, you got too much of a chance of Kyle Hamilton blowing it up. The Packers did not respect that in this game, mm-hmm. I felt.
They didn't at all. There were a couple times where they actually tried it, and whoever had to block Kyle or whoever was the alley defender, they blew him up. I think Marlowe did it one time. I know Kyle did it. And then some of the outside guys made decent tackles. I'm trying to remember this one play in particular. It might have been Marlin, but somebody they threw a little bubble screen. He got off the block and made a great tackle. So it has its positives, but for the most part, elite quarterbacks tear us up when we get them free releases.
Right. One thing, and this is I am afraid of Rodgers in this sense. It's the Ravens don't have tremendous physical mismatches across the board. Draymond mm-hmm. can give you a little bit of pressure and Travis can give you a little bit of pressure. Their other guys are just not big time winners at this point. I think Mike Green will be someday, but he's not there right now. I don't think Kyle right. Vannoy is this year. I think he was last year. Mm-hmm. But you know, if they had a Jadeveon Clowney, that'd be the kind of player that could really help them right now. But they don't have guys who win the one-on-ones as easy, which means they try and do things to manufacture and scheme pressure. Mm-hmm. And Rodgers, more than Malik Willis, is going to know exactly when it's coming and be able to do something about it or try to be able to right. know what he has to do about it, whether or exactly. not he can do it physically anymore.
Exactly. Rodgers will be 100 times more cerebral than Malik was. Mm-hmm. And he may not hit us on the deep passes like Malik did early. But he'll Rodgers don't mind nickel and diming you. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the few things I respect about Rodgers. He's going to take what the defense give him, especially in zone, and he'll 5 yard you, 5 yard you, 5 yard you, 5 yard you. And then once you come up, then he'll go over the top.
He certainly did that a plenty in that first game against the Ravens, which was frustrating as hell, I can tell you. And I looked at that last drive in this afternoon's game, and I'm a little bit worried that he's found Pat Freiermuth again. that last drive. I mean, he caught him a couple of times. Everything had been going to Washington for the last several weeks. Freiermuth is the forgotten man in Pittsburgh, but now he's going to have to lean on him next week, I would think.
And Jonnu. Their tight end room is very good. Jonnu, Freiermuth, Washington, and Hayward.
Yeah. Hayward's kind of got a designated role, but he might take on more of a pass catching role.
You saw him with the Mark Andrews play today?
Yes. They've been doing that with him all season. So that's he's their guy. Yeah.
They faked the tush push and ran option. Got about 30 yards.
It is typically a tush push play, but you're right. It was the Mark Andrews like outside run this time. I think we pretty much hit on everything here for this first episode. Coach, so much a pleasure to talk football with you. Whenever we get the chance, I just appreciate you making time for it. Tell folks where they can find your channel or talk football with you online.
On Twitter, you can find me at Coach Evans 9. I post a bunch of individual plays, and then I just be yapping over there as well. And on YouTube and all the other social media platforms, Instagram, what are the other things? TikTok. It's Sip to Tally. Sip to Tally fans. So I have videos and stuff all over the place. And I also have a second channel called More Sip to Tally, but it's pretty much dedicated to the other 31 teams in the NFL.
Oh, okay. All right. That's cool. I didn't know you were expanding, but that's great. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Coach. Other folks out there, what I'm trying to increase is hashtag film study mailbag use of that. I'll try and slot them on the correct show, have good questions for the second half of this one for Coach, but also I want to have some for 1 to 3 minute videos that you've been seeing online recently and on Instagram and Reddit and Facebook and whatnot. Appreciate you and hopefully drive a little bit more traffic to the show. If you want to make a contribution, that's a great way to do it. Coach, thanks again for coming on. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
All right, appreciate it.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.